And it's been happening too in the BMW Championship. Justin Thomas, 23 under at the moment. Sir Patrick Cantlay chasing at 20 under. And Hideki was on fire, but he's dropped the shot, I think, Hideki. He's 19 under at the BMW Championship, part of the FedEx Cup Series. But Rocket Ed doesn't care about that. He cares about footy, and he's our Monday analyst, and he's back again after a big weekend. Good morning to you, Rodney.
Hi, Daniel. How are you, buddy?
Very well. Thank you.
It's good to hear.
Very well indeed.
How was your game yesterday?
I loved the game yesterday. Richmond West Coast.
Yes, it was good, wasn't it?
Yesterday it was the we spoke before, Rocket, about round 22 and what it promised, particularly from a top four showdown perspective. And I think we got what we wanted, didn't we?
Yeah, I think those four show there's a bit of a line. Maybe the pies are coming a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's outside that five can win it. I think stand to those five and who can perform best in that 4 week period.
It was like the Richmond West Coast game. It was like if it was a tennis match, West Coast in the first set or like the first quarter just won it 6-love or 6-1. It was just like they couldn't do a thing wrong, but Richmond just held their nerve and didn't panic and just found a way to get back into the contest. It was fascinating to see how good West Coast was, and at quarter time, would they keep it going or would Richmond find a way to get back into it?
Yeah, because interesting, games like that, when it's ebb and flow or someone gets the momentum, generally there's a shift in style or a shift, maybe some magnets and different stuff, but it was really just around the ball. And the West Coast controlled everything around a contest, especially stoppages. And then Richmond got the ascendancy there and were able to get inside 50s through Martin mainly, but Edwards lifted.
Yeah, he was good.
So they able and Shuey and Yo and that just sort of plateaued a bit during that period. Then it didn't look as though they were going to score West Coast in the last quarter. Those two quarters, they didn't much. And then the last quarter, they lifted again. They got behind, and all of a sudden, about the 10-minute mark of the last quarter, they lift their intensity around the ball as well.
I think it was 24-12 half. The clearances there at one point early in the match.
Early in the match,
West Coast way, which was one of the key reasons why they had the dominance. So when you're a coach and you see the game sort of slipping away, and a lot of it was through... not so much positional play, but with Richmond having the players behind the footy and West Coast being unable to score. When you're the coach, is it things that you can see that you say, well, I've just got to change this right now? Or is it constant communication with your assistants to say, what are we going to do here? Because we're going to might have to do something dramatic. How quickly can you make the change? And how much can you talk about it before you have to act?
I think those things are discussed in the box. You say, well... this looks like it's happening. We're losing losing their forward structure. The forwards are coming up too high, because Richmond loved to have that anchor, whoever it is. And they were generating it. Even if the West Coast had five forwards, they generated a seventh defender. Mm. So Lambert had come up as half forward, going around the ball, winger would drop back, and that allow Hooley or Grimes to be free. And that last one was always 60, 80 metres off the ball consistently. During that third quarter especially, West Coast just lost their structure. They all went chasing the footy. So you can see that happening, and then you discuss, what do we do? Do we just instruct our forwards to keep a little bit more at home, try and be a bit more accountable, make it 5-on-6 or 6-on-7 as such? But really it was, especially when it's wet, it's more about the application of winning the ball around. And I thought West Coast, which was unusual for them, they just hacked the ball forward. I know Richmond surge, but every now and then they'd have a good handball, release a player, then they'd run and carry the footy. Now they'd take their full 15 metres, where West Coast are just stationary and just king ball. So I think that type of play then is difficult to change. You have to wait to the break, really, to be able to tell them what they're doing, especially with no runners now. Mm. It's going to be difficult for a coach to do that. So now that West Coast adjusted that in the last quarter, and they're able to get a bit more fluency, even though it was difficult conditions. But as far as staying at home, and I thought Ryan and Rioli and these players were way up the ground, and then there was no way they were going to score.
It's one thing you can't do against Richmond is your high forwards get too high up. But West Coast have been great at having the ability to get up and then reset the ground really quickly, and that's when they're most dangerous, running back towards goal. But Richmond, in my opinion, you have to equalise the number behind the ball, because as Rocket's alluding to, they literally have that wicket keeper as such, sitting 60, 80 metres behind the ball, and they all defend accordingly. So it's on purpose, it's not by fluke. So then the opposition look up and there's an outnumber, and obviously the umpire, now you've only got, 4 seconds? They rush you to play on, so you've got to end up dumping it, and then they've always got an outnumber at the contest down the line. So, yeah, in my opinion, you have to equalise the numbers on Richmond in your forward half?
It was a crazy game half in the sense that it looked like West Coast were untouchable early, and then it looked like structurally there's no way Richmond can lose this because West Coast can't score.
Mm.
And then somehow, and I don't know how, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, how West Coast got back into it. Because it did look like Richmond were going to go away and win by 4 or 5 goals, and then the Eagles nearly pinch it.
Well, they got a few clearances in that last quarter. Dom Sheed had a really important role in that last quarter, and they were able to get the ball, which is what they tried to do initially, Rocket, get a ball deep inside their forward 50 and put some pressure on the defenders of the Tigers, overlap or get over the majority of the defenders to a one-on-one. It ended up being Kennedy and Grimes or Asprey at times in the last quarter. So they got it deep and put some pressure on. Kennedy got involved in the one-on-one. Then they got some flow goals. I mean, that goal to Waterman, 45 out on the angle, was a really good goal, which got them rolling. And Cripps has just got a knack of finding a way to kick goals wherever he is in the world.
But I think he made
from Thailand with Pat Cannon. He kicked goals from there.
I think you made the point, though, that Kennedy was playing closer to home.
Yeah.
Where Kennedy and Darling as their targets. You talk about high forwards, Brendan, being up. But the target forwards were way up the ground as well. And normally on a dry day, they'll be able to get back because they're great athletes. They'll be able to run. But on a wet day when there's no flow with the ball and it's just a hack kick, made it a bit more difficult where they probably needed to, and they did in the last quarter, they were able to plant themselves a bit closer to goal.
All right. So we've seen two of the best teams go at it at the MCG where the grand finals play, the two last champions.
Yes.
Half, have you got a different view of either of those two teams based on what you saw live on Sunday?
No. I've been on the Tiger train for a little while now, and I've absolute respect for West Coast, and that doesn't change after yesterday. I think the rain certainly helped Richmond yesterday, coming in half time, and that we know that their style and system works as effectively in rain as any team's ever had a system that works in rain. So I think that certainly helped. I lost nothing for West Coast yesterday. Rocket, you?
No, not at all. And when it was dry, they looked fantastic. I mean, the second quarter they went to sleep a little bit, but I think. Yeah, they'll be difficult to beat. Now Richmond will get Nankervis and Cochin back. Depends now on Grimes. And I've said here about a month ago, it's a worry for me if they get injuries.
Mm.
I know it's the same with any team, but they haven't had the continuity, Richmond, with some of their players. But they're coping with it really well. They're playing some good footy. I think Nankervis is vital to them, but he's missed, and you wouldn't want him to miss too many because he's more, obviously going forward, because he's missed a lot of football. He needs continuity, because if he plays this week, then there's a bye. He hasn't had a lot of football going to the first final. So,
Dustin Martin's back to 2017 form. His performance in the last 10 weeks, I reckon, has been off the charts.
No doubt.
Off the charts.
I
think he's the best player in the competition at the moment. I mean, there's a good list now with Bontempelli and Fife. And
we have this discussion every week,
Cripps,
though.
I know, but the thing with Martin is that he's such a good user of the ball and such a great decision maker, whereas there's, with Dangerfield and Fife, there's issues sometimes with their kicking, whereas he seems to be the complete player.
And in the wet too, he just took out his cleanliness with the ball, his touch. He fumbled one early when it was starting to rain, but other than that, he just was so clean. And his ability to get out of it, I know he does another don't argue, but there's times he just moved sideways. They tried to tackle him just with his strength. He was able to get by and just set the game up.
His hip swivel was strong yesterday. He had a couple of real swivel hip moments, and I thought, wow, he's back. He's feeling it.
But you referenced his year from a couple of years ago. That's what it felt like, and this is the best two teams at it.
Yeah.
And he looked like a 16-year-old playing under 12s.
So in the final, do we tag him, BJ?
Interestingly, Hutchings went down yesterday. He was playing playing forward, defensive role on Hooley initially, it looked like. So he started forward for the West Coast. He wasn't tagging Rocket, which I thought was unusual, I must admit. So he's gone now with some sort of injury. That's going to be a blow for them coming into a finals campaign.
Does a West Coast like... who did Yo take on?
Cripps.
So does Yo go to Martin?
Well, Martin plays a different role. So
he doesn't go past halfway.
Yeah, he predominantly plays forward. So you must... That's why it's hard to play as a mid on him as a tagger or a run with. So then he just will start walking out of stoppages and drift
forward.
So what
you could do is Lambert goes up and plays as actually covers for him.
Correct.
So Lambert's man, Edwards. You can start Hutchings at half back and he can take Martin.
And Lambert comes up, you drop off, but then you still got to have accountability at stoppage. So it's someone that's been able to play both midfield and half back, so then go and defend him one-on-one when he is last out the back. So that's why he's such a hard matchup, and that's why it works so well. And he is hard to tag because it's you got to have someone that can defend him as a defender when he's forward, and not many of those guys then come up and actually you know, they can go and stand next to him in stoppage, but in terms of stoppage craft,
yes,
they don't have the tricks that he has. So that's where you can get them either way.
Do you reckon Big Tommy Barras is not really looking forward to the review? His individual edit tape. He made some blues yesterday.
Handball.
He made some errors yesterday, Tommy. It can happen to the best of us. So no shame there for Tommy, but it was a bit of a setback for him. What about, as we move on from that game, just some of the incidents in it, or a couple of incidents. The studs up interpretation rocket. Jack Rewalt was hit a couple of times yesterday. Your take on that?
I think it's against the spirit of the game. I think really when the studs up, it's more danger and above the shoulders. The first one was on the shorts and touched some skin in the leg, so it was... So if I was Jack, I'd be very frustrated. So I imagine that Damien Hardwick could be on the phone to get some clarification on that. It'd be interesting to see what the AFL will say. But I wouldn't have thought that was the intention of the AFL to take that out of the game.
It's not the intent of Jack either. I saw one. But he's there to try and get leverage off his opponent who's standing in front of him.
He's a bit the same as using your body to create some space.
Yeah.
Let's have a listen to Damien Hardwick, who was speaking about it post-game. I think you might be right, Rocket, that he might be looking for some clarification.
I don't think that's what the rule was brought in for. If you don't want high marks in the game, come on. I don't know. I don't think it's a good look. End of the day, the rule for me was brought in for the guy that kicks the guy in the head. Last time I looked, that player's head wasn't on his hamstring. Have some common sense. I didn't know why we needed the rule in the first place, to be perfectly honest. We seem to have a very reactive nature at stages. The game of AFL is so tough on these blokes. Don't give them so many rules.
Damien Hardwick there with some feedback for the lawmakers.
That is 100% correct. And this is the whole problem, and fans get so frustrated by what the umpires do at times because they just make it so hard to umpire the game. And it's so reactionary at times.
But everyone's critical of the umpires. It's not the umpires'
fault. Exactly, that's my point.
Yeah, it's not the umpires' fault.
That's exactly my point.
So the rule, as has been written, what happened yesterday was a free kick.
Yeah.
But it's just wrong.
That's right.
Do you know what I'd do if I was involved with the umpires there? You'd go to the umpires and say, what is the best way to interpret these rules? What is the easiest way to make it black and white? Then take that back to the AFL and the clubs and say, well, this is the way we're umpiring it. It'd be a minor shift. Umpires and clubs and players will adjust. But at the moment, it's making it so difficult for the umpires. Even a 50-metre penalty, holding the ball, that interpretation.
And that's exactly right. And the other one, which annoys a lot of people, is just this focus on a rule from week to week. Every week.
It's like the jumper punch. Yeah, they did absolutely. That round three or four, and it cost Hawthorn those three
absolutely.
Goals.
Absolutely.
Then they didn't do it the next week.
And it's probably going to cost Hawthorn a spot in the finals.
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt.
So I totally agree with the game's hard to umpire for umpires, but where's the responsibility of umpires for having a feel for the game? I understand technically it's a free kick.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, where's the feel saying that
but we don't know.
No window for feel
above.
Yeah, I know. That's why I reckon umpires get it right. So even though they're told, because I'm saying a lot of the new umpires now are very black and white.
Oh, yeah, very literal what they do.
Yeah, literal.
But I would imagine though, BJ, that today, and I'm guessing a bit, but I would imagine that the AFL will come out and say that they were the right free kicks.
They will.
So the umpires got it right.
Yeah. So then they're only feeding the beast.
That's right.
And what do we say to players? I'm not worried about what our people play outside. I only answer to my coach. So the coach is saying, you've done the right thing. The umpire's coach is saying, well, you've done that, you made the right decision. Okay, well, I'm right, I've got a tick. I don't want to go to my review and get my backside kick because I made the wrong decision.
I agree with you, BJ, but there's no scope for feel. You're umpired to the law. Feel doesn't come into it. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but there's no scope. And until such time as there is interpretation changes or they alter the wording of that stupid rule, that will be what we'll see. That's the reality of it. They've got umpire to the rule.
Can't be that hard, can it?
Well, we make it that hard. The law.
No, I'm not saying it's hard to umpire. I sympathise with them, but it's not that hard to write and get the wording right.
And the people have got to make it above who are making the rules, who are jumping on umpires, they've got to make them have a bit of a feel for the game as well.
They're the people that need the feel, yes. The lawmakers.
Well, it was interesting because Eddie Maguire was broadcasting the game yesterday and he's on the committee. And he actually said, well, I was one of the ones that said that we had to bring this rule in, that that really should have been a free kick. And it's just like, well, you know, this is the problem we've got now, because you want to keep putting in reactionary decisions to what we see out on the field. You're going to be chasing your tail the whole time.
There's unintended consequences, and then you've got to defend yourself.
Yep.
And they shouldn't. The AFL wouldn't want to be discussing this.
Mm-hmm. No.
So they're going to be spending all their time defending this, which is major in our eyes, but it's minor in their ways. They've got other things to worry about.
After a great weekend of footy leading into a great home and away finale this weekend in round 23, 19 past 7 on a Monday morning. Rocket Ead is our Monday analyst. He's going to stick around till 8 o'clock and go through the weekend that was, and maybe even have a bit of a look ahead at what might be for the finals in the AFL. We'll do it all after this.
Goes without saying, doesn't it, really? The boys have established some momentum in recent times, and it's been impressive the way our players and all our staff who support them, including our coaches, have really applied themselves and persevered, and now we've given ourselves a little bit of a look at it, and our challenge is to keep our heads in it and focus on our next opponent this week.
Which is the Adelaide Crows in Ballarat. That's the voice of Luke Beveridge, the coach of the Western Bulldogs, who were very, very impressive again yesterday at Giants Stadium against the Giants. You know what, boys? They trailed by 3 points at halftime, and they won by 61.
They were 17 down just before halftime. They kicked the last two goals. Those three or four shots at goal before halftime.
What about this for the Bulldogs after halftime in the past fortnight, last six quarters? 21-17, 143 to 3-11-29. That's emphatic. On the flip side of that, the Giants, after halftime in the last 2 weeks, so after halftime of both games, nine behinds to 17-14, 116.
Got some problems.
They've got some issues. Let's focus on the positive first with the Bulldogs, because as this SMS has told us today, the Dogs have now beaten 1st, 2nd, 4th, 6th and 7th, and they're not yet inside the 8 rocket.
And they've lost to 18th.
And 16th.
16th.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I think one thing you can take to the bank, I know you guys are punters, they'll win this week. Adelaide in the cold at Ballarat are no chance of turning up.
Well, Adelaide will get to them shortly.
They are gone. They are Max gone.
Big Max. As gone as Max.
No, they're very impressive. I saw the last half yesterday, but their handball ability to move the ball, and then they've become better kicking the footy. Mm. As far as picking options and their entries inside 50, a lot more efficient, but a lot more purpose when they go. A combination of long and short. The Giants, we'll talk about it in a minute, but they've got some, we made a bit of fun, but gee, they're really struggling. They are battling. They're going to be out in straight sets in the finals when it comes.
The Dogs structurally have made change sort of about a third of the way through the season, maybe halfway through the season, where they've actually started to keep their forwards at home more. So I think that's made a big difference in their connectivity from midfield to forward.
And it's not as hard on them as it was. Get up the ground.
Yeah, physically.
Ground,
yeah, that's right. That's right. But, I mean, their midfield and the numbers that they get through the midfield, I mean, McRae had another 38, Dunkley had another 30, but it's just so deep because Lipinski's playing some really good footy. He looks a really nice
player. And McLean's back.
McLean's back. Yeah, so they've just got so many numbers. Is it sustainable with what they're doing, Rocket? Because it's a different Bulldogs. It's more, we talked about on Friday, more razzle-dazzle with the way they go about it than the blue collar of a couple of years ago. Is it a real worry for the rest of the competition what this team's coming and what they're coming
Oh, for
with?
Sure. There's no doubt. Whoever they play in the first final, so it's a Pies, or even it's Richmond. We talk about Richmond. If Richmond slip up this week and get fifth, you wouldn't want to play the Bulldogs.
No.
A, in form and confidence, but B, what they're able to do. And kicking bigger scores. And I think the structure, you talk about structure, and no, Norton's a good player, but even Shacky, even though he's a young lad and he's got a fair bit to go, just give him that bit of height. And you've got Dixon, you've got Lloyd, you can kick goals, and then the mids kick goals. So they've got a really dangerous side. And I think it is sustainable because they've got so much depth in the midfield. They can throw some players through there. It's just not... And I tell you, he's a good player too. Young Bailey Smith's a good player for his first year.
Yes.
He's a really good player. And kicked a really good goal just after half time to make the game even. So they've got some really good midfield depth, and we know the Bont and can go there and go forward as well. So him, if he goes forward, he's the third tall now. So he's so dangerous. Their rucks are an issue, obviously, and maybe a tall defender if they play a side on a dry day that can mark the ball. So that's why they used to get numbers back so much, was to try and protect their defence. So if English gets back and he's out ill, then you got Trengove and go back, which I think he's quite vital to him, Trengove down there. They had him out of the side for quite a long time, but at least he can compete and he's a bit of a scrapper and he's physical, so that does help take some pressure off Cordy and those guys.
It is an interesting question about whether or not it is sustainable, because what they did on the weekend was play the forward half game really well. And they scored, I think it was 10 goals or so from forward half. Sorry, 6 goals, 7 from forward half intercepts, 9 goals, 10 from intercepts, full stop. So the Giants turned the ball over a fair bit in their back half through the pressure and the way that they'd set up. What we've seen the last couple of weeks, and they've kicked 100 points three times in the last 4 weeks, the Bulldogs, is that they've scored a lot from the back half as well. And that's really that's the question mark in footy these days, about whether or not that is a sustainable brand, particularly in finals. And we've talked about that on By the Numbers, the award-winning podcast, which will be available Thursday in your podcast stores. That's the question. But what they did on the weekend, or yesterday, was score from the forward half, BJ, which is another element which they needed to probably add, but building into a finals campaign.
Yeah, in particular, and 20 tackles inside 50s, which is a very high number. So that's the impressive thing. They've got the ability to move the ball from the back half but pretty swiftly and score, but then adding that forward half game to their overall game is going to hold them or give themselves a better chance come finals time against better opposition, better defensive teams. So when they don't have that ability to move the ball from the back half and around score from stoppages with a high handball, and then they've got to go to the nuts and bolts, and that's the forward half game, pressure, score from turnover, re-entry, which will give themselves the best chance of performing in finals.
Now, as the equation is, they have to win. They have to beat Adelaide in Ballarat.
Correct.
But then they have the confidence of knowing that they've flogged both the Giants and Essendon, who sit in their part of the draw in that first week of the finals, because they'll either play, well, they'll probably play the Giants.
Yeah,
again,
all being equal, they'll play the Giants.
Or they've got potentially a Collingwood matchup, which they haven't beaten them. They've played them twice this year, but they almost beat them on both occasions. So,
and they're a
very
team
different
now.
Team. Very different team.
Doesn't 5v8, so they...
Yeah, but it could be the Giants.
Oh, they could go up to 7. They could go up to 7. The best and lose. Well. The best and lose.
So it's Collingwood Essendon.
It could be Collingwood Essendon 2 weeks in a row.
Yep.
But good luck trying to do your ladder predictor, because you come up with a different result every time you do it.
Every time. What about the Giants then, Rock? I mean, they're obviously still in finals calculation. They're sitting, well, not calculation, they're in the finals. That's where they are. They're sixth at the moment. They're locked. But their last couple of weeks have been atrocious.
And I reckon it even goes back further. I think we. Port Adelaide, they held on for a one-point win.
Yep.
It was on the back of Haynes and Davis holding them up. Mm-hmm. Then they beat Sydney and probably could have lost. And Sydney's form, because they're so young, hasn't been great. They lost that up in the weekend. They'd lost 5 or 6 in a row, or 4 or 5 in a row. So because they, and we're an industry, because they win, and I read somewhere, oh, they're in good back in form. And I thought, no, they're not playing well. Mm. And then it was last week against Hawthorn, got belted. This week got belted. So their form line for 4 or 5 weeks hasn't been great. And so they're in a trough. And I don't know if I can see them getting out of it. I know Kelly's back. He'd be better for the run. Cameron's to come back. They said a corked hamstring. So whether that's a cover-up for their fitness stuff again, because they got another soft tissue injury. Only time will tell. So I really struggle. I'm really struggling for them to have any impact at all in the finals.
One of the interesting things about the Giants is that everyone seems to want to make an excuse for their injuries, whereas Essendon's had a lot of injury concerns, Richmond's had a lot of injury concerns.
Collingwood,
and it's like, they'll be better, and they've got this and that. Whereas,
but they've had them for years, so there's got to be something internally wrong.
Right.
There's got to be something about their program or the staff that is a problem for them.
But they haven't been able to cope with the injuries. Essendon has, Collingwood has, Richmond has. The Giants, it's almost like they've put up the white flag. Oh, we haven't got these players, so we can't do it. They gave up in the second half against the Bulldogs.
Yeah, they struggled for run, which is normally their go.
Absolutely did. They just stopped running.
And there's effort and effort. People say, oh, players always try. I think we had the discussion last week.
We did, yeah.
But there's levels of effort, isn't there? There's a minimum effort required, and there's an extreme effort, which you expect in finals. But from week to week, sometimes it fluctuates, but not to the level that it's been.
It felt soulless, and if I was Stephen Cornelio watching that, you go...
I'm asking.
I don't know whether I... it might just be too hard. I don't know if I was looking at that going, I don't like that. I don't like what I saw.
He would have been looking at the joy and the love at Marvel Stadium with the brown and gold. That's what he'd been looking at yesterday, Stephen. That's what he'd been looking at.
Brown and gold, you reckon?
Well, apparently he's told... Who was it saying on the weekend? Hamish McLaughlin, brother of Gil.
Former business partner... business partner of Stephen Canilio is Hamish McLaughlin.
Is that right?
That's why there was this link.
He was saying that Carlton have been told, allegedly, that Stephen is not going to Carlton. It just opens the door for the Mighty Hawks, BJ.
Or GWS.
Or stays at GWS, there, as you rightly say. That is going to be one of these storylines we'll absolutely be covering.
Or is there a Lance Franklin finals club out there with a Hail Mary that we haven't spoken about?
That would be another good story. I like those Lance Franklin stories.
Go back home to WA.
I like those
stories.
No,
I don't think you'll go there.
Well, it's only Fremantle. West Coast can't afford him.
Well, Fremantle can, absolutely.
I don't think he's going home.
They could use him, but the Giants need to get themselves together because they've got a finals campaign. It's going to be short-lived, though, the way they're tracking at the moment. They've got the Gold Coast Suns this week on the Gold Coast to get themselves some confidence.
I don't think that's a good thing for them.
No. Well, at least they might get some confidence. At least they might get a win and start to...
But if they win by 20 points, there's not a lot of confidence coming out of that.
Yeah, you'd want to win by 50 minimum,
I don't think they'll have any trouble beating the Gold Coast by a big margin.
They'll need to win by at least 50. Well, at least 50. Rockets with us on a Monday morning, 27-8. We'll come back, go through the other games in round 22 of the AFL. Plenty still to come on RSN 927.
Welcome aboard the Breakfast Club.
Shooting Bambi if we don't big rough next week, but if we don't, it'll be all Graham Wright's fault, or it won't be my fault. I won't be picking him one way or the other. But no, listen, we'll see how that all unfolds. You know, Mitch Lewis has hurt his shoulder. We need to see how that comes up for next week, and he's a big part of our future, and we just need to make an assessment on what we do. But Ruff's made it a bit more difficult, but there's a part of me that says, gee, that'd be a nice way to finish your career, you know, six goals in a big win and in front of your home fans is a pretty special way to finish up, but we'll have a discussion about it during the week.
It was a very special way to say farewell to your home fans for Jared Rufford yesterday at Marvel Stadium. The Hawks 70-point winners over the Gold Coast Suns, 118-48, and the Ruff kicked six and saved his best for last, Rocket.
Yes, nice goal. I don't think Ellis is going to pick him by the sounds of things.
I don't think he's going to pick him.
Already planted the seed.
How do you feel about that, Daniel, as a Hawthorn person? And you went there yesterday.
No, I actually didn't end up getting there. The kids were a little bit annoyed.
My kids went.
Yeah, I know.
Does that sit comfortably with you that's it? What a way to finish. Yep. Or do you think you should play next this week to give them I don't know whether he gives them a better chance of beating West Coast.
Yeah, I think he does give them a better chance of beating. If Mitchell Lewis isn't fit, he absolutely plays. But I agree with Clark. I think there is an element of that six goals on a farewell sort of tour send-off is a terrific way to say, I've had a good time.
I didn't think that until I heard him say it, and I thought, you know what, that's probably fair enough.
Yeah, I did think this after the game yesterday. I thought, what are they going to do? Because it's obviously the talking point, Rock, about if he played well, would they keep him in the team? He's obviously gone to kick six.
I would have thought that conversation would have been had.
But they gave him the chance. Everyone gave him the chance to kick the six. Like, everything was going through rough, which wouldn't happen against the West Coast Eagles. So it was an abnormal game to a large degree yesterday against a pretty inferior opponent, as we know. I'd be surprised if he played, but I think that's a beautiful way to go.
Spot on.
Yeah. What will he do? Will he play VFL then, or just that's it? Don't play.
Are they in the hunt?
Yes, they're half a game inside the eight.
Right.
I would say that he plays VFL.
I reckon he'll play.
So last game this weekend for the VFL, well, and then one final. So he'll play. You think?
Or potentially not, but not. I'm just thinking. Not. Well, don't check out because.
That's what I'm asking.
Anything can happen. So if they make finals and someone gets injured, then
yeah.
Russ first man up as a forward.
Because, right. I mean, I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, if Mitchell Lewis didn't get injured, would have Ruffy played?
I reckon he would have, but it made it easier.
Yeah, I reckon they would have got him in. It was 31,331.
Because it's a good marketing tool as well, so there would have been 13,000 there.
It would have been 15 max yesterday had Ruffy not played.
Did you know that Jared Ruff had made a lot of people very angry yesterday?
Why is that?
Because I've got a feeling Marvel Stadium weren't expecting so many people because they ran out of food.
Oh, did they?
They ran out of food.
Oh, boy.
Now, I wasn't there, but if I was
I wasn't there,
I would have been one of the angry ones. As it was, it was
ran
just
out
my
of food. Not on your salad diet. There's plenty of salads there.
There's a lot of very angry people.
Well, that's bad planning because I know that Ruff's playing third. Just get, anyway.
Yeah, there would have been 15,000 maximum, I reckon, yesterday had Ruff not played. So he's doubled the crowd.
I guarantee you there were a lot of very angry people.
And the Hawthorne Marketing Department.
I kept hearing about it all night.
I mean, your house.
Too many.
So they're a chance, Rocket. But they're not good enough, Hawthorne, are they?
Yeah, I think they are good enough. Yes. I think they're good enough. Because when they lost to the Bulldogs, they had three players off.
Yeah.
And that was, and they were on the wrong end of those umpiring decisions when they're coming for the first time for jumper punching. And they cost them two goals. And the Bulldogs kicked eight in the last quarter. So they'd be in. They'd be in. So I think they're good enough. I don't think they'll make it because they're not going to beat West Coast in Perth.
Yeah.
But I think they're good. I think they're about in there. In those teams, now the Giants dropping off, 6-10. There's not a lot of difference between them.
If you go through the ladder as it sits now, I think that's a good point. I think they're better than the Giants and they're better than Essendon.
Yeah.
But they're going to find themselves a game out in the end.
Yeah.
I think West Coast will beat Hawthorne.
Yeah.
But we've got to remember, using the last time they played as a reference, it's only a couple of points difference between
they're very
the two
close.
Sides at the MCG.
I don't think Hawthorne lost any game by more than 30 points. No. They've been in every game.
But they have a style that can worry West Coast.
Yeah, and they change their style. Yeah. They change their style depending who they're playing. So I think it won't be an easy game for the West Coast Eagles.
No.
And if they think they're just going to turn up and win, they could get they could lose. But I think they've got a bit to play for.
So I was going to say, the harder thing for Hawthorne is more that West Coast need to win to be guaranteed top four. Because if they lose, they'll fall out of the top four at West Coast.
Yeah.
And they've still got an outside chance of finishing top two if that went really well for them.
Correct.
But Hawthorne's best players are their older players, but they're still good enough to have a huge impact on the game.
Well, there's one coming through that's emerging.
Now, my mate Warple.
Your mate the Warpedo. He was great standing again yesterday.
And he got tagged, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was being tagged.
Did he?
And then he still had
he's getting some heat.
Yeah.
All right, I'll throw
it's going
I'll,
great.
I'll throw
not a, sort of Kane Corn style tagging, but
I'll throw an irrelevant question at you. He was one or two games away from being eligible for the Rising Star this year.
Yes.
If he was eligible,
this argument.
Who would be the Rising Star winner, Warple or Walsh?
No, I still think Walsh.
I think Walsh.
But Warple's last 10 weeks has been outstanding.
Yeah. I think his first 10, he was finding his form.
Oh, yep. I reckon he was pretty good in the first 10.
No, he was
right.
Okay. I obviously said he stalled, but he was slowing down. But his last 10 weeks has been...
He's accelerated, no doubt.
Is his last 10 weeks been better than any 10 weeks that Walsh has had?
Hard to tell. I don't pay particular attention to Rising Star.
But I mean, it's irrelevant because obviously Warple's not eligible, but he's only a couple of games away from being eligible. For his age, what he's doing
he's
is
going beautifully, is what he's doing.
At the moment, he's taken over from Mira as their number one midfielder.
Yeah, he has.
Mira's dropped off.
And what role does he play next year when Mitchell comes in? Because essentially, he's playing Mitchell's role.
Yeah.
Mitchell takes the number one, then Warple will be in about. So Mira, and then they've.
No, well, does Warple. Because this is what my question mark was over, whether he can be that A grader, essentially. And he's proving me wrong, which is great. It's not the first time. Won't be the last. But does he then come in as it's Amira, Mitchell, Warple, and because Shields
is that too slow?
You'll have the two. There'll be two other guys, three other guys rotating through there.
We've got Keneally on the outside. Remember?
Well, he's a bit similar, isn't he? That sort of.
Well, does that change? Does that change that the. Development of Warple, does that change
if
their approach?
Comes
well, that's what I'm saying. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
17 in a row for the Gold Coast Suns on the wrong side of the ledger. Rocket, a forgettable year for them, or is there anything to cling to?
They'd sell about the youth, the youngsters, but whether the youngsters will stay in long term.
They've been doing that for
it's
a while.
The next question.
I mean, there's one thing they're clinging to, and they're holding onto him as tight as they can, and that's Mr. King.
Ben.
That is there Stuart St Kilda? Is that the rumour?
All the suggestion is that he won't finish his career at the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah.
And perhaps he'll be in red, white and black.
Yes.
Oh.
Ben King.
Already they're saying that.
Yep.
Oh, that's been said for
they were saying that. They were saying that 5 minutes after his name was read
that's
out.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
They were saying that 5 minutes before his name was picked out in
well,
the draft.
That's true too.
That's unfair on him and Gold Coast.
Unless, of course, it's reality.
I'm telling you, if King leaves the Gold Coast, they may as well shut him down.
You've been saying...
I'm going to say it.
You find a reason every week to shut them down. Yeah. it's just this one's been king.
Oh, they've got plenty of food when they play. You should be... Hmm? Your family will be okay watching them.
BJ, tell me about the Bombers on Saturday night. What did they do to turn it around? A good victory over Fremantle, even though I focused a little bit on the numbers. Yes, today they won the inside 50 by 11, the Dockers. Had two more shots at goal, but the Bombers win comfortably in the end.
Well, I didn't get to watch much. I actually watched more than I thought I would because I was doing the North Power game and watching the Fremantle Essendon game on the tally.
We'll get to the Adelaide conversation shortly.
Look, there was a response, but I think we talked about on By the Numbers that they can win. They can win.
Who declared them?
Yeah, well, we all did. We said they can win, but it's a long way back from a 100-point defeat, is what it is.
Yes, it's a long way back.
So it's a great win, regardless, because to go to Perth against either West Coast or Fremantle, it's a tough road trip. And Fremantle, stats would show they're a 4 or 5 better goal team at home, so
they were still
up against it. So it was impressive what they did, albeit Fremantle being a little bit off, particularly in front of goal and with their efficiency going forward, as you just mentioned. And watching the game, like, honestly, Fremantle have a crack. I don't think you can question any Ross Lyon teams, but they just don't have... There's three guys that you want the ball in their hands at Fremantle. Mundy, Walters...
And Fife.
Fife can butcher at the best of
them.
But there's one more. But
Stephen Hill?
Bradley Hill.
Bradley Hill is the one. There's three guys. The rest of them... They give great effort and have a crack, but they just don't have that polish.
But the thing was, and this is what I was really proud of from Essendon's point of view, was that they actually tried to win the game. They put speed in the game. They actually tried to score, and they made Fremantle have to score, and they couldn't. And I think that was the key difference in the game. Fremantle looked dangerous in the last 5 or 6 minutes when they had to take the ball through the corridor and do that sort of thing. But early in the game, when Essendon had to make a stand by taking risks and actually putting speed in the game, they did it and they hit the scoreboard and they deserved to win.
Personnel changes clearly helped back into the team for the Bombers. That's a good thing. And we've talked about their injuries through the last month or so and how it's affected their form. No doubt you've got to have your better players playing well. But you're right, it was a big turnaround. It was a terrific performance by the Bombers. Fans would be annoyed by that after what's happened in the last couple of weeks, though.
It's quickly forgotten about now that we're guaranteed a final spot.
Well, that's true. Yeah, too. That's right.
Although, but you just prefer a better performance last week, so you're therefore in better form leading into the finals. So obviously you've got Collingwood this week.
You're going to
have
to be good this week.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be real good this week, the way Collingwood play on Saturday afternoon.
But as long as they're good, they can go into the first final and...
Essendon's going to land where they probably should land, between 7 and 10, and I reckon they've done very well to make the finals considering the injuries they've had. I reckon they've had a good year.
So, and think about who they don't have and where they potentially, the impact those players could have had. So it's, like you've said, between 8 and 5, 5 and 8 was the...
Absolute pass mark. Absolutely.
So closer to, the top four with the players...
No Devin Smith, no Tom Bell Chambers, no Joe Danaher Hurley coming back. They didn't have Hooker on Saturday night. I think they did really well.
They did. It was a good victory over Fremantle, who were disappointing again. Rocket, Adelaide football. You mentioned the word soulless before talking about GWS, Whitey. I witnessed the Adelaide performance firsthand, and I watched the North Port Adelaide game on replay. You were there, BJ. There was not a soul in either of those performances, considering both of those teams had a finals berth on the line. God, they were disappointing.
I'm actually more disappointed in Port Adelaide than I'm in Adelaide. I think Adelaide have made absolute list management decisions poor. They've looked at their list and said, yeah, we're not far off. Made the grand final when 17 or whatever it was. Had a bad year from hell last year, and that was just what it is. But we're okay. They're slow. They don't defend, and they need a total overhaul.
They're broken.
Yeah, they're shot. So I wasn't half surprised that that happened. So but Port Adelaide, whose form, they've been up and down, and they've had a couple of good wins, and they're playing a team that's 3 or 4 spots below them, who, coming off a belting, you knew they're going to answer it, knew they're going to respond. And to come over and get belted like that, and they're in the finals, there's more issues now with Port Adelaide than originally with Adelaide. Adelaide, you just know, it's just a, you're just now making a blank canvas. Get rid of a few. Have to go back, which Adelaide wouldn't like as a city and as a club, because we're up a bit like a few of the clubs, you know, Sydney and that, we're always thereabouts. But they've got to get some draft picks in. They've got to.
But they were witches' hats on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, they were.
So do you have a different view of Adelaide and what they need to do based on going over there and seeing them live? To think, geez, this is worse than I thought, or is it very much, this has been coming for a while?
Yeah, no, I think it's Rocket's point. It's been coming for a while, and we've worked out, identified the list as all over the show. It's nowhere near what it needs to be demographically. So they've got a whole lot of issues from a list perspective they've got to sort out. But that doesn't excuse the way they played. But they were woeful. They did not try.
Do they play for the coach?
Not on Saturday. They didn't. Absolutely not. They didn't play for each other. They didn't care, it seemed. They were literally standing still as Collingwood players strolled past them on Saturday afternoon. It was remarkable.
I saw the last 5 minutes, and it was as if, like, sometimes a whistle had blown and Collingwood were, like, still playing it out. I don't say that lightly. Like, it's like I was watching the television with no sound, so I was like, what's going on? It can't possibly be.
Well, it's like
that
watching training where you half ground training.
The old token pressure.
Yeah. Adelaide had the
shadowing
bibs on.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the bibs on. They did. It was remarkable to see in real life.
See, would that be unnerving as a coach, seeing your players serve up that?
That's the worst thing. You hear a lot of coaches, most coaches say, we coach effort. Yep. And some players don't like that. No, what about our tactics? But it's the bare minimum. You've got to have effort.
The foundation.
You've got to. And that is the thing that would gall you the most. You know, you cope with mistakes. You cope with not adhering sometimes to game plan. And it just happens in the season. But effort, it doesn't take talent to have effort. It does not take talent at all.
And the opposition can't control it.
Yeah, and you got total control of it. So you might. Now, the opposition got obviously some control of how you play because they can stop you and all that sort of stuff. But when effort, so that would be the most galling thing for Don Pike.
So the question to you then, Half, from, again, what you saw live, who are Adelaide's leaders? Who are their on-field leaders to stop that from happening?
No, I think Rory put up a fight. Rory Sloan put up a fight, but he didn't have any Cowboys with him. He was riding shotgun by himself.
Because that's kind of been their problem this year, isn't it, really, when you look at it, and maybe even the last couple of years, is their leaders collectively haven't fired.
Tex didn't do anything. Tex looked awkward again. He's got concrete hands at the moment. Everything just bounces
and concrete
off.
Concrete shoes.
And concrete boots as well. A lot of concrete activities.
Did you have a look at the way they played in 16, but especially 17? They were fast. They moved the ball so quickly. Tex has struggled. Jenkins has struggled. Eddie's reached the past. No, he's 32.
Good moments.
Lynch is okay, but he'll need.
He got tagged by Greenwood. It's a very good coaching move.
Yeah. Tag him because you know what Lynch is going to do. He's not quick either. But their midfield, they get a lot of possessions, but there's nothing between the lines. They don't break a line.
Yeah.
They don't set it up. They're not great kicks. And their defence is pedestrian. So they've got nothing that actually breaks a line like it is.
But it's the same. But it is the same team, though, that got to a grand final, essentially. There's no real difference.
Yeah, but Melbourne made a prelim last year, too.
Yeah, that's true, but
things change pretty quick.
Yeah, but they haven't changed the game.
It's 2 years on. It's not one season. It's two years on. And last year they gave excuse about the camp and a whole range of different things. Now, whether that's an impact, I mean, for me, that's too long ago. But they haven't gone with the times.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about the Magpies, though. They were very, very good. And this re-emergence of Jamie Elliott as a threat in their forward 50 is going to cause some headaches for some
teams.
He's
a good player, Jamie.
Five goals and remember seeing an
equal highest amount he's ever kicked in a game.
Yeah, he was awesome. And set up three or four himself as well. And I remember seeing him at one stage early in the game, first quarter it might have been, where he pounced on a ball and fed it out to Travis Varkin. He exploded to the ball. And I haven't seen Jamie Elliott do that in 5 years. And I thought, he's moving really well. Must be feeling really good. And then he had, obviously, the night and kicking his five. But he's a dynamic player.
He is, and he's very difficult. If he's got that explosion in his game, he's difficult one to match up on because he's only a short man, but he can jump and he's a good mark. And they've got, so all their players, Stevenson comes back, DeGoey comes back, and they've got Hoskin Elliott who all got some speed. Hoskin Elliott's probably not as quick as the others or explosive, but they can all mark the ball. So they don't need the height as such, as long as the ball comes in quickly and evens the space.
Well, he's a Charlie Cameron type matchup. So Cameron being, I think, a bit more explosive, even though Jamie's not slow, but he's that type of matchup. So dual threat in the air, on the ground,
yep.
speed. So once fit and able, he's a difficult matchup for any team.
They were good, the Pies. Pendlebury, terrific.
What do they do? What do they do with their ruck going into finals?
Second Collingwood?
Ruck. Second ruck.
Well, they had Ruffhead playing that role on Saturday.
Yes, but if they play team, whoever they play, say...
So they play West Coast. They're going to
yeah,
need Ruffhead.
Yeah, that's right. They'll need Ruffhead down back.
Yeah.
Won't they? So that'll be the... What do they do for the
That's
forward?
A good question.
It's no, they've done well now with Ruffhead, and he's played as a ruckman. He was drafted as a ruckman, so he knows the
craft.
Played
the grand final as a ruckman.
He did. He did.
So,
it's a good question, Rocket.
Do they need, or do they put someone else back in defence so it allows Ruffhead to keep playing that role?
That might be the conversation being had today from Nathan Buckley and co at the Magpies. Need to get to a break, come back and finish off round 22 analysis with Rodney Eade, our Monday analyst on The Breakfast Club.
You've joined The Breakfast Club.
It's a good position to be in though, isn't it? To know that we've got a double chance. There's no doubt about that, but there's still a bit of footy to be played out. It'd be good to have the double chance in the home final first week. You know, we've got a big job next week at the MCG. I reckon there'll be a big crowd there, another good opportunity for our boys to test themselves out. Being able to play Geelong and being able to play Richmond in the last two home and away games is just wonderful preparation for us and great learning.
Especially when you beat them, Chris Fagan, coach of the Brisbane Lions. 1 point victors over the Cats up at the Gabba on Saturday. They are top of the ladder. Who would have thought? Who would have possibly thought that was...
Well, Whitey didn't think they'd make the eight.
Absolutely not. Well, they win between 5 and 8 games maximum.
Well, they have 5 plus 8 plus 3, so they've won 16.
We've done our best, though, half. We looked at their run home 10, 12 weeks ago, trying to justify that they could do it.
They could.
We all probably didn't think, but we'll making a case for them, and Whitey was just...
Defiant.
Because I'm very stubborn.
Can
I say that Lincoln McCarthy mark would have to be one of my favourite home and away moments I can remember.
You can remember?
I got in trouble at home because I just yelled. Emma came in from the other room and said, what's happened? What's happened? She thought one of the kids had thrown...
Do you know what made it...
Gone through
made
the window
that even better? Because I didn't see the game. I taped it and I just watched the last 10 minutes last night. Was the camera angle... was from the ground and had the crowd in the background.
Yeah.
It wasn't
elevated. Yeah.
And it gave it that sense of theatre.
It's just
theater
such a magic
more.
Moment. Considering where Brisbane have come from, the fact that McCarthy's a former Geelong player, that he hadn't had a touch all day, the significance of how good the mark was, the skill of it. It was just a very, very special moment.
It was absolutely a special moment. And more importantly, have the composure to go back and kick it.
Yeah.
When you're 4 points down.
I thought he was only about a 30% chance because he can do some strange things.
They are a fantastic story. And the emotion shown post-game by all the players, and Chris Fagan in particular, almost choked up on the Fox footy coverage. Rocket, it's a very special place, the Brisbane Football Club, at the moment.
Yeah,
they're riding
it. And the crowd are, real, as I said, that theatre, that camera angle, you see the supporters in the background just jump out of their seats, and they're really excited. So they've got the city behind them, which is fantastic. So they're playing some good footy, and we keep saying it every week. They're winning different ways, so that will stand them in good stead in the finals, whether they're good enough to how far they go. But they're not just have to play their good, pretty football. It was down the line football, both teams, because both teams defended the corridor and the switch very well. So it ended up being down the line, which you would think would suit the Cats.
But when Brisbane had to go down the middle because they got behind in the last 5 minutes, they did it and did it really well.
Yeah, and they've won a few games this year when they've come from behind late.
Yep,
I know even the North Melbourne game early in the year, and there was another one as well that they're 10, 15, 20 points down with 5 to 10 minutes to go, and they've got up and won. So they can kick goals quickly.
Well, we'll learn more about them this week, Sunday afternoon at the G,
the
when
Tiggers.
They take on the Tigger Train, who I think premiership favourites. Will check it with markets with Quinny after 8 o'clock.
But it'd be interesting if Grimes plays or not, because ankles, they've obviously jabbed him up to getting back out.
Yeah.
Well, now even if they lose, they're still likely to finish top two, which is a great position to
Brisbane.
Be in.
Yep. Mm. Your home finals. For the Brisbane Lions. Rocket, great to have you as always, mate.
Boys.
We appreciate your time.
Good to see you.
Have
Look
a forward
good
to
week.
Seeing you around 23 Monday analysis next week on The Breakfast Club. Coming up after 8, Cameron White.